with me traveling and, you know, little baby AJ just never quitting ever at anything. Yeah. It makes it tough. So
get a little date night in. Wine, little cheese board. Ooh. Cheese and charcuterie.
I love charcuterie. Mm,
little
so
hot honey with a little salami, little manchego cheese, baby. Come on, a little cracker.
Absolutely. Love that.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
This is the moment we waited for. Everything you want is right here. We gonna give them what they came for. We gonna take it up from last year. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Watch the game change. Yeah.
Hey, Adam.
Okay.
I shook my head. I was going to see if you thought I was frozen. Just fake frozen.
Yeah, I mean, it happens every so often. So, you got me good. I was like, oh, is this dramatic pause? Is he actually frozen? I mean, you didn't move a wink.
Why is he not blinking or breathing?
There wasn't a eyebrow hair out of place. I couldn't tell.
So. No, not
hey,
here.
Rob, what do you think about my power red today?
I think it's like a Tiger Sunday red. I mean, Tiger hasn't seen Sunday in a while, but I really like it. It shows that you are here today, out for blood, trying to slay this podcast and slay the other podcast and just make this your.
Wow. Okay. I love that. I got a big trip starting on Wednesday.
Okay.
Going to Kaysville, Salt Lake City. So all my Selkirk gear is in the washer right now. So I have my 299 Hanes Power Red. So I just wanted to bring that up a little bit, you know.
Oh wow, I like that. Mm-hmm. Probably pretty rough on the skin. I'm guessing it's not like a Lulu or like a Roan or like a Fury.
There's something about it. I don't know. It's fine. It's like one of those like 5 packs for $15, you know. So you know, about 4% of the cost of all those other brands, even though those other brands are lovely. Probably made by the same people somewhere on the other side of the world. Yeah, that's exactly
not
right.
Here.
Robert, we have a little lull in the action in terms of a PPAAPP standpoint. But we got a couple MLPs mixed in. Previously had one at the Beer City Open, now coming up in Salt Lake City, and we have a couple trades to talk about as well. So we have a Connor Garnett for Jay DeVilliers. That is the Columbus Sliders and the Utah Black Diamonds have made the swap for the fellas. And then we also have a, on the ladies' side, we have a switcheroo of Andrea Remenzi Coop from the Carolina Pickleball Club. Also to the Columbus Sliders for Brooke Buckner. Some of those, we'll just call them what they are, cellar-dwelling teams looking to shake some things up for
the
duration.
Who got better, Adam? Who got better and who got worse?
That's a good question. So right now, I didn't think that he was going to jump into the top five or anything, but I really thought that Connor Garnett – 3 months ago or so was putting together some very quality results. He was playing confident. I thought that maybe somewhere in the future he could sneak into the top 10 possibly. But I think some of those service yips and some of the issues with the serve has leaked over to the rest of his game. And I haven't really seen him have too quality of a result. I might have missed one or two mixed in over the past handful of tournaments. So I kind of think that Jay DeVilliers, as long as he's 100% healthy with the rolled ankle, I think that this is a pretty even a trade right now. And 3 months ago, I would have said that there would be a pretty significant advantage to Connor Garnett. So I still think he has it in there. Got to get some mental things situated. And he plays a solid left with righty Tyler Leung. I know they're both two left side players. I wonder what the Sliders are going to do, if they're going to keep Jay on the left, where Connor Garnett played to pair with Riley Newman, who has been looking to play the right. I worry a little bit about Jay on the right. I think he has a decent skill set for it, but every time I've seen him play the right, he's like straddling the center line and taking his partner's forehands away. I'm just not sure Jay knows another way to play pickleball.
He likes to control the kitchen line and move those dinks around, and I wouldn't say he's probably at his best when he's, you know, trying to be stationary on the right, doing different things. He's a guy that needs to move to feel confident, I feel like. And on the left, you know, he's able to take balls, move on the, you know, do the crab walk in the kitchen line, take a lot of dinks, and just really try to position himself. And I think with him, it's, it's been talked about before, like hand speed. So like, he's one of those players that needs to be a bully versus get attacked first, right? So if he's on the right, he's more prone to getting attacked first. So I think that's a little bit of the scenario when he's on the right, is if he's not moving around and he's kind of stationary, he's a little prone to getting lit up.
Yeah. Okay, Rob, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Now, given all that, and I do agree with that, he likes to take a ball out of the air. He likes to put maximum pressure. He likes to move. But given where his game is at now, which is a very solid game, maybe we'll call it unspectacular, but very solid from the left, right around that 30-year-old mark, should he possibly really consider shifting over to the right and adapting his skill set to be on the right, as maybe he's possibly reached his ceiling on the left side?
I think it's an interesting question, an interesting thought to explore. I just don't see him being a guy that can dial in the right side and play it like that. I have a tough time seeing it. Maybe if he's able to be over there and just sit on backhands and fade to the right a little bit, maybe where he has less, like there's less, when you're on the right, you have places where you're going to get attacked, and it's more structured on where you have to defend. When you're on the left and you're attacking from different spots and you're taking more court, you can get caught different places, right? You see Jay go behind the back a lot because he's getting caught leaning way too heavy forehand. So the only place he can't get back to the backhand, so he goes around the back because it's the fastest way to try to cover that. So less places to cover when you're sitting on the right side. I think you should definitely explore it and try it. It's hard for me to see him being stationary, though. He just moves well and likes to move and plays better when he moves.
No, I agree. No, that's a good detailed description, and I definitely think that. I've seen him play a little. I've seen him even try a couple times, specifically with a partnership with Pat Smith, to occasionally play the right or just play like a 60% left or 55% left. And it did seem a bit awkward, as his footwork and his flow is so important to him. But I was just thinking, kind of dumbing it down a little bit and thinking, he does have a solid backhand from the chest and he can manipulate the ball on the forehand side.
And there's
been multiple guys that, you know, 2-3+ years ago were considered one of those left side studs, and there's a lot of left side studs now, or a lot more than there used to be. So possibly thinking that he could be one of those that could think about transitioning to the right. And who knows, he might not even have to, as Riley Newman is liking the right side in men's, which is also a little questionable and a little dicey for me, as I just think he's better from the left. So kind of an even trade. And I think the next trait also, an overall talent level, is relatively even, but I do think that Andrea Rimenzi-Coop does have an advantage in doubles right now over Brooke Buckner, and Brooke Buckner does have the advantage in singles. So the Carolina Pickleball Club has had some issues getting to three in those doubles matches. So now they add Brooke Buckner, and they're shooting for two match wins with Ben Johns, Colin Johns, Jesse Irvin, and Brooke Buckner. And now if they do get to two, they have a better shot of winning the Dream Breaker. That's one side of the story. And then, of course, Andrea Rimenzi going over, pairing up with Megan Dizon, and what I would imagine would be Jay DeVilliers, actually. And they have played quite a bit of pickleball together, Andrea Rimenzi and Jay DeVilliers, from years ago. So thoughts on the swap, lady for lady?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Carolina had to do something, right? I mean, they had, like, no surprise they chose to do something with Andrea. And good for Andrea, right? Like, she couldn't have been having fun on that team. It was the, it, let's just say it did not pass the vibe check, Adam. It didn't look like anybody was having very much fun. So, you know, maybe Brooke will bring some life into that team. Who knows? Yeah. Yeah.
I just worry about Brooke. I love Brooke. I think she's super cool. I'm not very close with her, but all my interactions with her on court and off court, especially off court, she has passed the vibe test.
Yeah.
But can she fall into a pretty structured, rigid algorithm in the doubles game? Because she's going to be playing with Jesse Irvin and Colin Johns, and they don't like it when something steps out of line. If someone breaks, they start twitching, they can't handle it, they might show some negative body language on court when their partner isn't kind of following the plan or going for the patterns that they prefer and they like. So that does worry me in that regard, but fresh is fresh, new is new. And I think that, you know, even though they're all veterans and have been around forever, I think Andrea Rimenzi-Coupe leaving that team is the right play, as it has not been meshing. I guess they've only played three tournaments. So
And I
do believe one of those trades was it's supposed to happen, and one already has happened. So you know, just. Not where I do not have any form of inside information whatsoever. This is just what I got from the Twitter streets.
Got it. So not official.
Correct. But seems, you know, if someone threw it on Twitter, there's at least a decent percent chance that it's going to come to fruition. Rob, where have you been on the Twitter streets? I haven't. I mean, you really are all over the place. I mean, we're talking like 11 tweets in 30 minutes, and then you just kind of disappear for 48 hours. How's your Twitter game right now?
It's you know, my Twitter game is based on my mental state and whether I feel inspired. And I haven't felt inspired. You know, there hasn't been anything that's really, you know, hit me where I'm like, I need to share this. Mm-hmm. I had a nice little back and forth with Michelle McMahon, your colleague.
Oh, Mish McMahon.
Mish. She doesn't like when I talk about like what I'd like to see in the broadcast. Mm. She calls it nitpicky and thinks that like it's me saying that she's terrible at her job, which isn't the case at all. I said she's great. She's a pro. But seemed to take a little bit of offense to me saying I just – purely like to, well, one, that going over somebody's tennis background is a little tiresome at this point. Like, we all get it. Like, most everybody comes from tennis. I think it's interesting if you talk about somebody that doesn't come from tennis, like talk about Elise coming from volleyball or Callan coming from baseball. Like, that's more interesting. I think it's pretty well known that a lot of the most pickleball pros are have high level tennis backgrounds to some degree, college, low level pro, whatever. So I just don't find that super interesting. Me playing tennis at UNC Asheville Division I, like, not interesting to me. nor is it very interesting when I hear about it, about other players that I don't even know of, unless they were like a Lane Sleeth or somebody that was like, I don't know if she won.
Runner up. In
NCAAs, so something like that, that's really notable. Sure. But outside of that, not super relevant in my opinion. I'd rather learn other things about the players. And that was kind of my point, is like, it's cool talking about, you know, player storylines on like, they were getting into beef on Twitter, or they were this, they were on the same team last year, but this happened. And now like that stuff is good.
What about Megan Dazan being a vegan and Ed Wright being a carnivore diet, and they can't find places to eat together?
That's super fun. Match.
Is that good? Okay, good. All right. Perfect. Just making sure that qualified. Continue your rant, please.
That's it. It's just, and I think that's how things in the world get better, right? It's like you need feedback from, which like from a broadcaster's perspective or a commentator's, like, you want feedback from people listening. Like that's how you understand like what's clicking, what's not, what do people want to hear about and learn about the players. So I don't know. I think, maybe she took it as criticism. It was purely just like me wanting to share like what I think I would find interesting in broadcast.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be clear, when you're not playing and I'm not coaching or commentating, what we are is high-end fans.
Fans.
That's what we are. We're fans. Having their whatever we're doing while yeah. watching the stream Saturday, Sunday. And so, I mean, it's reasonable to me. And I would probably say, like, I think some people don't realize how much we're like switching networks or we have little blocks. Yeah. And when we're on a fresh national audience, I think you give the backgrounds, but possibly when we're on the YouTube or Pickleball TV, or we have more of that consistent fan base and there's less just kind of marginal fans or people just finding the channel and watching, possibly scrapping or going fewer and far between on some of the general background stuff. I mean, it makes sense to me. It makes sense to me.
Throw it on the graphic, right? Throw it on the graphic, you know, college here, tennis, yada, yada. But not even a big deal. It's just, we'd like to learn more about other players and other stories about them. And she did say that a lot of players, like, you know, she goes to players and they don't get back to her on an interview. So she can learn more about them.
Right.
But at the same time, you have to dig.
Yeah, you do. And I saw this great clip, and granted, you know, we're not even close to there yet, but it was NFL. The top handful of players for each team, it was a nationally broadcast game, Monday night or Sunday night or Thursday night, whatever. But it was Tracy Wolfson, Jim Nance, and Tony Romo, who is the analyst. And they are there with the players. They are required to go to this meeting for not even long, 5 to 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes. And they are writing notes and getting background, interesting information. Totally. And Dave Fleming and myself just happened we were in lovely San Clemente, and we just happened to find a table off to the side over by the pool, right by where the locker rooms were. And so we would go post up there an hour before our broadcast, and we got J-Dub, we got a handful of players to come over and talk to us. And that's the type of stuff we were looking for. It's like, we know everything about you. I mean, we've done this enough. We know everything about your game. We know everything about your lead up, how you got into the sport. Give me something good. We asked JW about his chains and what they meant to him. That's where we got the vegan carnivore thing. Like those little tiny things.
Totally.
And those little, we partnered together 2 years ago. There was a little slight breakup issue. And now we're playing each other. Those kind of storylines, I think, are a little juicier and more interesting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think occasionally some of the general information needs to put out there too. Maybe less frequently. I don't really know. I'm an analyst, not a play-by-play. Two different jobs.
Yeah.
Anything else from Mish and that little back and forth that you had?
No, not that really. But I think so. Somebody, I was just getting a little practice in here at the YMCA in Ponte Vedra, and a couple. One actually has Crohn's, so we connected on that, but. They mentioned they love the pod, and they said a couple things. One, they want more tips. They love like analysis of like us breaking down a match. So maybe we could do that. It's a little bit more work on Selkirk sense, but hopefully we could do that. That'd be fun to like go through a match and actually talk about like what's happening, slow-mo, pause, etc. But they mentioned that when they were watching MLP in Grand Rapids, that there'd be matches on. But they don't know what's at stake, right? They don't know, like, is this, like, what are they playing for? Mm-hmm. They don't, like, they didn't know if it was, like, is this the gold, is this the final? Is this the semifinal? Is this for third place? There's just no way for them to know. So they were, like, watching and enjoying it, but they were, like, I don't know what this, like, what does this match mean? So I think there's still ways to get better at that as well. But one thing that doesn't need to get better, Adam, and you saw this firsthand in Grand Rapids, and it was so refreshing to see really, really clean, good replay.
Oof. It was amazing. Like
you know 100% whether the call is right or wrong.
Right.
And that's pretty new. So
yeah. And I mean, Like, the first time I saw it, I was like, good God, man. That is, I don't know what they call it, the FPS. I'm not a frames per second. It's not my thing. But mine, yeah. I mean, and I'll tell you what, Rob, accuracy, 100% accuracy or dang close to it, phenomenal.
Yeah.
But pace of play, just boom. Oh, look, there it is, right back.
Big deal.
There was multiple times where I was like coaching or giving a spiel and they had already given what the call was. I was like, oh man,
that's wild.
And got it right. So, you know, not zooming in on, you know, reasonably grainy footage.
Across the court from the far end on a diagonal angle. Like, you have no idea.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know the monetarily how much it is to all this stuff. I know it's expensive stuff. All electronics
is. Whatever it is.
God, it was amazing. It was perfect. Pace of play, smooth. For sure, some of the reasonably shady characters out there that like to take one every now and then, and there is people out there that do that, they're second guessing in their thing because they know they can't get away with it.
Adam?
Oh, no, I have no names for you. Don't even try. Don't even try. I said,
you know,
shady,
I have to ask.
I said shady line calling characters. That's stepping
out
for me.
You know I have to ask.
So, yeah, you have to. That's
was there controversy at Grand Rapids about line calls?
Well, I think you're also asking another question that you know the answer to. And yes, there was. So there was, we did first day. I still can't believe this, that the hurricane that went through, sorry if I got this wrong, Jamaica area, it shot up, caught through the Gulf of Mexico, caught my parents in Houston, and then went all the way up to Grand Rapids, Michigan, which is just wild to me. But anyway, we got wiped on Wednesday, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. So we were indoors. So there was just not a challenge system in place. And so we had referees on the lines. And there was a very controversial call that a ball went past a player, landed, God dang, a foot to 18 inches in, and the play was called out. And what happened was the referee that was on the line thought that the ball, when the ball crossed the player, it could possibly hit them. So she was looking at the player to see if the ball hit them, and then she kind of turns her head quickly and could not make the proper read on the ball that was well inside the baseline. So it was kind of an unfortunate set of circumstances. Multiple things had to happen. But either way, it was a big match. I believe it was something crazy like 17-17 or something like that.
Oh, it was important.
Yeah, Florida Smash versus the BLQK Bears. And yeah, that's a tough one. And that's also – it leaks over. You lose 1 point.
It's demoralizing.
Even for like a seasoned professional or a lot of these professional athletes that they have to just wipe that clean and to know that you kind of got screwed and then not have that affect points down the line is tough to do even for professionals.
Yeah, I mean, you think at a professional level, like the last thing you have to worry about is a line call. But yeah, I mean, it happened, but Adam, quick question on, like, we were all able to see that replay and see that the ball was well in. Hey guys,
puppy dog, chill out, guys.
But we were able to see that the ball was well in. So why couldn't we do a replay based on what was like the video that was taken?
I don't know if you know this, but I haven't checked a bag since probably 2005. So I'm going on 20 years of no check bags. I only carry on. And what's made that really easy for me over the past couple years are Selkirk backpacks. Because little do people know, you get a personal item to carry on most carriers. And both items are big backpacks. I carry them on. I fill both of them to the brim. And they both count as carry on. So I don't have to check a bag. It's important.
No, I'm right there with you. And that's the big boy. And I am past my playing days. So I do one big boy and one little smaller fella here that I can take with me from the hotel to the venue every single day. Leave the big boy there. Don't check bags. Get yourself some Selkirk gear. Small, medium, big, you need it.
I don't have the small. I need the small. Somebody send me the small. But yeah, you're right, because I can put my little laptop and I don't have to take the big one. It's important. Selkirk, send me a small. I'll buy it.
So, I mean, I think that you have to say before the event starts, we have replay or we don't have replay. Now, I know that this one was pretty egregious and the standard camera could pick that up, but I don't think you can just kind of pick and choose and do that. You have to say beforehand, even though, I mean, that camera could have been 150 yards away and could have picked up that ball was in. So, yeah. I mean, some of the just general facilities, the growth has grown so much that the infrastructure doesn't fully support. Sure, we have great venues. A lot of the venues are competent or awesome. But, you know, the fact that we're going to an alternate site, an alternate venue, I think that you just kind of have to take it with a grain of salt and realize the situation on the rainout day and just know that it's the production.
Cheaters Paradise, baby.
The Cheaters Paradise, yeah.
Let's go pray for rain. Yeah. Let's go indoors, alternate venue, no cameras. Let's go.
Cheaters Paradise. I'm going to pull the ripcord on something. No consequences. So why not? Even though you did have we're saying all of this, but we had four referees on court.
Yeah.
So special circumstance, and the person that missed it immediately apologized after the match, and there was a couple things that happened. It's not like she was just looking and missed it. It was looking for something else. The main referee's looking at the feet, looking to see if that ball contacted the player or their jersey. Yeah. So it's tough to kind of to jerk your head and kind of see those sight lines. So it was an unfortunate series of events.
But isn't it the standing ref's job to see if it hit somebody's clothes, and it's the line person? She was on the baseline. Isn't it her job just baseline. To focus on the line?
That's a great question for this specific circumstance. We have not had referees on the lines in forever. Yeah. Like I remember back in the day at the U.S. Open, like 4 years ago, and the players actually voted to not have them. Because granted, it was referees this time, not just like random 4-0 players sitting in a lawn chair with a Landshark beer. So different set of circumstances. But I do think that technically goes under their responsibilities as the head ref to watch the kitchen and see if the ball contacts. But it seems like they always – basically the head referee almost seems to always need help when it's not a foot fault violation. And I get that. I'm not even faulting them or chastising them for that. You know, foot faults are super important and they need to be on that. So again, tough situation.
I've always said it, and I don't know why it hasn't been, I mean, maybe it's been tested like once or twice. I don't know, but it is from a chair umpire. They have such a better vantage point of looking directly down on the lines and seeing balls that would be on the far side, whether they're in or out. And I know there's not a lot of real estate in pickleball to have chairs. A lot of these venues have not a ton of space on the sides, unlike a tennis court. So, but I do think having that vantage point from above would make the ref's job much easier.
Yeah, and maybe you could even have, having that vantage point even helps for foot fault calls. I mean, sometimes you go for that Ernie, you're calling on the far end and the front part or the heel lands in, and then you toe tap and they're blocked off. They can't see that. So totally. I think that helps. So you could have one ref kind of directing the flow, saying the score, all those kinds of thing. And then you have a second ref with a vantage point up a little bit higher, which would help with everything. So probably not there yet, but I think that that's something that is very reasonable in the near future. To make happen on all the tours.
How cool would it be, Adam? Like, think about this. You know, like, just think about like a 10,000 seat basketball arena where you have the basketball court, and then you have the full arena, the full surround. Think about how dope that would be. Like, if you had a whole arena, but only for one pickleball court. You know what I mean? It's like you just have the pickleball court, so it's like Arthur Ashe, but for pickleball. And just like, how sick would an arena be like that? Wouldn't that be fun?
Right.
It's one pickleball court.
Right. Use the lower level, maybe line up some chairs or something like that to where you have, you know, you don't want the player, the fans too far away from the action. So you
That's
can
what I
make
mean.
It
like, you need it stacked on top of the court, basically.
Stacked. Okay, like where, so you're saying more vertical than like spread out is what
but,
you're saying.
But a full kind of like, call it an arena where you're going to Adam Stone Arena, sponsored by State Farm, and this is, it's just pickleball. There's a one pickleball court and an arena, and that is the spot. Like, that would be, I mean, economically, probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but it would be so dope.
Yeah, and it's cool because they have the amphitheater situation in San Clemente. So it goes up. So, like, the amount of people that you can get, like, within 50 yards of around the court is much more when it goes up and it's not spread out. So,
yeah, Atlanta's kind of like that, too.
Yeah, it's down in the ground, which does help a lot. And I'm excited to see this venue in Kaysville for the upcoming MLP. I believe the number that I got was a 2,000 seat arena.
Sick.
Just, yeah, a little 2,000 where you can sit 2,000 people on championship court. So
that's dope. Are there any pictures of that?
I have not seen pictures. I'm going to be there in 2 days, so I'll get a first look at it. I'm going to get some rec in Wednesday night. But that could be a very exciting development for an atmosphere and indoor pickleball. And dude, I looked at the damn Salt Lake
City.
What's
the weather in Salt Lake? 99. Oh, it doesn't matter.
99.
It doesn't matter.
99.
No, it's actually 72, sir.
72
and 72 and calm, no wind.
No, I mean 99, hey, dude. That's
we know
wild.
There's going to be no disruptions. I mean, other than maybe flights, but no disruptions to the picky.
Yeah, no disruptions to the picky. Let me see these notes here. What do I have here? Okay. I was gonna take a look at a couple. You know, it's a couple weeks away, but the Kansas City PPA, a couple interesting teams on the men's. I picked out a couple here. We have Romanian Tower 1 Andre Daescu back in business at PPA.
Okay, that suspension's up, huh?
60 days was the ruling, a two-month suspension. Yep. And he is going to be jumping back in the action with Mr. Matty Dub, Matt Wright. Those are two older gentlemen, but two quality players. And
they won their last tournament, right?
It was something very good. I believe that is correct.
So Andre, they won.
The big hug where he rests.
No, it's the best. It's the best.
I know you've experienced that, Rob.
Just puts it on and then just.
And then, yeah, joy. So, no, that's very exciting. And I know Matt Wright likes some stability next to him, whether it's whether it's Fetty Stacks or Andre Daescu, two extremely high floor players. So that could be a pairing that pays dividends. We also have a light amount of firepower and Christian Alshon and Hayden Patrickwin matching up together.
Wow.
I think that is a super cool matchup. I would guess that we'll see Alshon on the right, but I think that it's probably pretty fluid with those two. But I feel like I've seen Alshon on the right more frequently than I've seen Big H on the right.
Alshon's got some nice stuff off the bounce now.
Oh, yeah. It really started in Minnesota with Thomas Wilson. The off the bounce stuff. Bounce, pull it, trust the hands, know that you have good pace and spin on your speed ups off the bounce, even on dead dinks that are below the net tape. They were having a lot of success with that. No idea what's going on with Thomas Wilson, but get well soon, buddy.
Yeah.
And so that could be an electric partnership. I would even say that both of them over the last 6 months, I would label them flashes of brilliance with some inconsistencies, and those inconsistencies have gone down though. Like the soft stuff of both of them and the cleanliness of play from both of them is pretty dialed. So you're pairing the offense with consistent soft stuff. That's a lot to handle.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. It'll be Kansas City in a couple of weeks. I'm assuming it's going to be quite hot. People don't realize how hot the Midwest gets. It gets hot. It gets humid. It'll probably play pretty slow, which might not favor Big H and Christian that much. But yeah, that's an interesting partnership. Who else do we have?
Let's see here. Those are the only two I wrote down for the fellas.
Yeah, those are both fun. Good to see Andre back in action.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't like it when I just list off 11 teams. Remember when I did that?
You just go down the draw.
I just go down the list. He's like, okay. Let's move on to something else. Something that caught my eye on the ladies' side was Hurricane Tyra Black and Vivian Glosman pairing up together. I don't believe that I've seen that one before. Maybe I'm
Glosdog, man. She's having a year. She's having a hell of a year.
Yeah. 23 and 24. Man, those are just strong physical prime, athletic prime ages right there. They both have really great skill sets, bring a lot of fun stuff to the table. I'm seeing a Georgia Johnson Mari Humberg. They had a phenomenal, phenomenal run in Mesa, Arizona, I believe, because something happened. Georgia's partner couldn't play, and Julie Johnson signed off on partnering with Mari Humberg. I believe they made it to the finals. So that could be a very fun team. And we get some usual suspects here. And yeah, I'd say that I'd say that that is probably the two that caught my eye the most. Everyone else has played many tournaments together, and it's some of the same partnerships that you would expect on the PPA. So just a couple fun ones from that Kansas City preview.
Yeah,
even though it's still a couple weeks away. So
yep, and then following Kansas City, we got the Bristol Open, I believe it's called.
Bristol.
Which I think for everybody going, they're gonna have a good time. Bristol's dope. Kind of nestled in the mountains, like a little Blue Ridge, Smoky Mountain action. You gonna drive?
Probably. Yeah. I'm gonna see, but probably.
Adam, you're gonna like it. There's a stadium court right there, which is like, I think the bleachers are going in like now. The facility's literally brand new. And so you've got they've got six indoors, they have 13 outdoor perm, and then a couple tennis courts up top where they might have to tape lines for amateurs. But there's a little restaurant bar called the Patio that's connected to it, Adam, which, you know, you're gonna have to hop in there. Ice cold beer, nice drinks, some nice sandwiches. I think you're gonna really enjoy yourself in Bristol.
I like beers and sandwiches. Do they have chips too?
Of course they have chips. You can get them with Old Bay. You can get them
the seasoning?
Barbecue.
They do all kinds
of stuff, Adam.
Love that. No, I'm excited about it. I haven't been able to drive to anywhere. I miss a little bit of road trip.
You miss that Civic life.
He's still kicking it. He's got a couple years of caked pollen on him right now, or her right now, but that's okay. We'll get through it. 180,000 miles, Rob. Okay,
how's the fam? How's Corinne? How's little AJ? What's happening?
Little baby AJ is doing his thing. He's babbling. He's got a handful of words he says, but he's just talking all the time.
What's he say so far?
So he talks
like you.
He'll say ball, and he'll say dada. And
dude, ball's a great one of the first best words you could ask for.
One.
He's pretty
accurate when he likes to carry around paddles and sticks and things and just hit balls on the floor with
them. This is a good omen. This is good stuff.
Unfortunately, I was thinking maybe 6 months ago he could be left-handed, but he's going to be right-handed is what it looks like.
Hey, make him go both ways.
Yeah, make him a Jack Monroe. That's right.
Yeah.
So just be a little ambidextrous action. That would be fantastic. Corinne's doing well. Still pretty locked in to the AJ situation. She has done a couple things for herself lately, but not that much. So not a ton of pickle, not
Adam,
a ton
buy
of
her,
golf.
Buy her a little spa day, man.
Yeah, I know.
Get her a little spa day.
Yeah. So we got a there's a teenage girl down the street, and I think that she's gonna be a solid babysitter for us.
Nice.
So that's maybe we can get free a little more often. But with me traveling and you know, little baby AJ just never quitting ever at anything.
Yeah.
It makes it tough. So
get a little date night in, wine, little cheese board, cheese and charcuterie.
I love charcuterie.
Mm, little
so
hot
good.
Honey with a little salami, little manchego cheese, baby. Come on, little cracker.
Absolutely. Love that. All right, Rob, the last thing that I have here is I was going to go through, because you even mentioned it earlier, just a couple of where the team standings sit.
Yeah,
for Major League Pickleball, we had that standalone tournament last weekend, and now we're back to the regular season.
Which counted for absolutely nothing.
Cash money, but that's actually something to bring up on the broadcast more. Maybe you talk about less about the general backgrounds, and you talk about what round we're in, what team they might have to play,
100%.
And what kind of prize money. We're talking 140K purse for Premier, 60K purse for one tournament for the challenge.
We have to know what's at stake. What's at stake in this match. That is probably, I would say, the most important. Like, what does this match mean? What are they, like, why should anybody care?
Right, and the third, fourth, like, you get something or you get nothing.
Yeah, I like that. That's almost, that's more
three.
Interesting.
That's
more
top
interesting.
Three. And yeah. I mean, I even had it, I don't know who, somebody on the hard eights. I mean, you know, it's not, certainly not life-changing money, but I mean.
But it's like, money.
I've never played one match for 2,500 to get third, you know, like 2,500 per person. I mean, that's not nothing. So you're playing, literally playing a 90-minute to two-hour match for $2,500. That's, yeah, that's something people, and in Premier, it was significantly more than that. So nothing or something. And that people like that.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's you start understanding why the players are motivated and what they're thinking and all that.
Yeah, so I'm going to so right now we still, with the scheduling issues, we still have some of the teams that have played more matches.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to go by points per match.
Yeah, I like that. That's how it should be.
Yeah, the points per match. And real quickly, 3 points for a clean win in regulation, no Dream Breaker. 2 points if you win a Dream Breaker. 1 point if you lose a Dream Breaker. 0 points if you lose in regulation. So that's how it breaks down. The Hustlers are on top with 18 points, but they have two more matches played than anyone. So that's 1.80 points per match. And then the top teams are the St. Louis Shock at 2.13 points per match. And worked out perfectly for them, Rob, that they didn't have their best tournament when it didn't count at the standalone tournament.
Yeah.
So they get to continue that quality regular season run, hopefully for them, and in Salt Lake. And then we have two teams with 2 points per match, and that is the Dallas Flash and the New Jersey Fives. So those are your top handful of teams in the Premier Division. And
are all of them in action this week?
That is also a great question. I do not have that tab.
I know the Shock are. I think the Flash are.
And yeah, so I would say that it's only two, possibly three teams that aren't going to be there. So there is a chance of that, but. Yeah, that's also important.
I think there's 10 Premier going and 4 Challenger.
10 Premier and 4. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, so the SoCal Hard Eights in the Challenger, the team that I coach in GM.
You guys have 3 matches then?
We only have 3. That's right. So we had 6 in Atlanta. We took DC off, and now
6 is crazy, actually.
Yeah, it is. It is, and so now we have 1 Saturday, this upcoming Saturday, and 2 on Sunday. So we only have 3 matches. As one of the teams there,
but this is a huge weekend for you guys. Like you guys, like these are really really important matches for you guys to get back into the mix.
Oh, of course, yeah. So we had, I believe we went 4-1 at the midseason tournament, but we did not do great in our previous stop in Atlanta. So
yeah,
this is huge. So to get 3 matches to, you know, maybe get a Dream Breaker win and 2 regulation wins or something like that.
Yeah,
if we lay an egg or we lose 2 matches of the 3 in regulation, I mean, math is math, you know?
Yeah.
Even though we still have more matches to play than we have already played, it's the numbers start stacking up against you, and that's not where you want to be. You can only get 3 at a time.
So what's success look like this weekend for you?
I think success, I mean, I'll say something a little more general, and I think just building off the Beer City Open standalone tournament and just kind of finding a little more meshing at throwing Yana Newell in there. So just building on some of the specific things for us, I think is number one, but in terms of results, I would say a winning all 3 or possibly losing it in Dream Breaker and winning the other 2. We have to be,
you need some regulation wins. You correct. Need some we regulation
to,
wins.
We do. We have to be 2-1. We really want to be 2-1 or 3-0. And if we do go 2-1, having those 2 be regulation wins as opposed to Dream Breaker
wins
would be absolutely huge for our point standing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm excited for this weekend, man, because like this is what I was so stoked on at the beginning of the year with the continuity and stuff, and why I was a little annoyed that the midseason tournament didn't count for anything other than some cash. Because you guys would be in a completely different scenario, you know, with the results you had at midseason in Grand Rapids. But this is the fun part. It's now there's you know, some everybody's got results. There's a standings list. We've passed the midseason tournament. This is kind of the home stretch of the rest of the year with a couple more events to go. And we get to see a lot on the line now. This is like Major League Baseball when the playoff picture is starting to become clear, right? So this is like now every little match and every little game means something.
Right. Yeah. Scrap the, who cares about the first 140 games? It's the last 20, it's the last 22 in baseball that matter. And those are the races where there's real implications. I know everything counts, but you know, that stuff's already happened. And
but now the tension's higher and there's more on the line.
Correct. And play.
So I'm pumped to watch you guys this week, and I'm going to be like, man, they need this regulation win. Yeah. Let's clean this up in regulation, guys.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I like the most is seeing how the players react to the big moments.
Yeah.
Does someone step up and take it for us? Does someone pull back and not play optimally because they know that the moment's tight? Like those are the things that I see and I love about Major League Pickleball. Really all tournaments, but especially I feel like you see it more in Major League Pickleball, specifically with that team format. So
as coach and GM, are you kind of relaying this to the players just so they understand how critical this weekend is and how critical it is to try to get three games in a match?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, they know the numbers, the total matches played. We've already played six, you know, these kinds of things, you know, with a 1-5 record, you know, you need points. You need points. Yeah. So we you know, I like to talk a little bit more kind of like some of the macro stuff leading up to it. And then we get a little bit more specific with a game plan against a particular opponent,
sure,
and what do we need to do for us against that opponent. So, there's a lot of things to talk about. And some players want, hey, you target left hip here. When they do this, you do this. And if they are going to pull that ball cross court, you must take it here on the counterattack. And then some players, it's more just kind of getting them through, building up their confidence, talking about, you know, just their general energy and taking care of them, and a little less of the specific game plan because it could overwhelm them, or that's just not what resonates with them. So it's different for every player, but it's important to know your player and give them the right words, and it's not always easy to do that.
Yeah, and knowing that mixed is kind of the place where you guys have struggled historically. What's kind of the coaching aspect of knowing that you guys need to play better in mixed? Because one thing I've noticed, like just with myself playing, is that when I get a bit passive in mixed, particularly at the beginning of the points, like for example, if my partner's returning, I have to have the mindset as the guy that I'm taking every single fourth. Wherever that ball is, I'm taking that ball. I'm not letting it get to my partner, and I'm going to use my speed and reach to keep that ball back to them. Because what's happening in mix, especially with serves and how tough it is to get, especially with women, how tough it is to get in to the line off of a big guy serve, it's critical that the partner covers and takes that fourth.
I think it's an underrated part. Because whether they're driving or dropping, of course, if they're dropping, you should be taking everything as a fourth as a guy, literally 90%+.
Yeah.
So driving makes it a little more difficult, but when they are in the back of the court, that's extra time for you. So your reach, that extra one step that you get for partner protection is absolutely massive. And you hear all the time about the fella picking his spots or crab walking on the kitchen line once we're in a neutral dink rally. Play big and be big earlier in the point.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best times to do it. How many times do you just have that studly fella, whether you're playing him in mixed or gender, and you can't get in. You can't keep you. He keeps you back. You can't get a ball to drop in the right spot. He takes control of the point with his preferred weapon, whether that's backhand or forehand, most likely a forehand. And it's just one of those things that I don't think people see quite as much as when that guy plays a more dominant style when 100%. All four players are at the kitchen line. So actually, I mean, I think that plays in perfectly to the tip of the day, and I apologize to the fans as we have missed that a time or two recently. We're going to try to be very consistent with it, is knowing that for your mixed doubles game. and taking advantage of fourth shots and commanding the kitchen line, not when your opponents are already there, but when they have not made it there yet. It's a highly underrated part of mixed doubles and so, so important, especially if your opponents are dropping a lot. If they're dropping, they're back and playing soft, you better be a psychopath up there.
Yeah, take it, because you can get to everything. So this is, I mean, this isn't just pro. This is, I would say, you know, probably 4-0 and above, right? Like if you're playing mixed, and even if you're playing gender, like you always want to protect the returner, especially if you have a big server. If you're the one at the kitchen line already on the return team, your job is to protect that return person. That's your partner. If there's any ball that's coming that you can remotely get to, because you know they're going to struggle to get to the line, you take that ball. Take it. It gives your partner time to get in, and it keeps them back.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. And I think it's important also to note that 4-0 and above, because I think most players at that level, or a lot of players at that level, can take an extra bit of court and recover. And when you're talking about, you know, 3-5 and lower, that's going to be tough to really come over and get back to where you need
exactly.
to. So I think it certainly applies to amateur pickleball in a big way, but a 4-0 plus is probably a good arbitrary cutoff point to kind of maximize that aggression. And I know some people are not going to like this, Rob, but if you are not, as a male in mixed doubles, occasionally overextending, you are not playing properly.
You're being too passive.
Yeah. You're being too passive. Now, there is always a threshold. You can't, every other point, you can't be overextending. But if you don't get stuck or get your hand in the cookie jar or get out of position,
get burned on the line
at
once,
some small frequency, you are not applying enough pressure as a male mixed doubles player. And I will stand on the hill with that one.
No, I 100% agree. If you're not scrambling for a ball behind you, then you're not far enough over. I 100% agree, Adam.
Right. Threshold matters, but you got to do it. You have to do it.
I mean, like mixed is interesting, man. It's like, if we're talking about pickleball being unsolved and strategy, to me, mixed is the most unique in terms of all of the different dynamics. And you're right. Like the teams that you see really do well are where guys are extending and putting max pressure on the other team.
And ladies can handle the pump fakes.
Yes.
They can find well-timed aggression of their own, but they are not as much the full-on source or the strategy is for them to be incredibly offensive. At least in a standard alignment, you know, in a standard alignment. So they handle the pump fakes. They play well off the kitchen line.
They
move well.
They move in tandem with a guy, which is not easy. It's tough. Yes, AJ.
Oh, bring that baby over here. We're about to finish.
Baby.
This is perfect.
Bring that baby.
AJ. You come here to me, buddy boy.
There's a sweet
diaper
little baby.
Time.
Oh, AJ. Baby.
Oh, there we go. Perfect. Baby time. That was awesome.
That was a beautiful toothy smile. What a cute little guy.
Oh yeah, he's got the teethies out there.
So cool.
Rob, I think this is perfect timing right here.
I think it's perfect timing too. This was an absolute pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. And until next week, sir, which we will have a little recap of the Salt Lake City tournament. So
And guys, perfect. Just so you know, we do need you to like and subscribe to this thing, because we, believe it or not, we publish this every week, every single week. We are here for you. Just throw us a like, subscribe, comment below with how cute AJ is. Jesus, those little teeth. And then, we'll see you next week, because we do this every week.
Lovely.